podcast. I'm Ben Ralph.
And I am Dan Emeka, still.
Yes, this is episode number 42.
42.
All right. And in today's episode, we're going to be highlighting three limited releases and then one mammoth movie, Battle of Sands.
Mammoth?
Well, in terms of, like...
Comparatively, I guess.
The first big, big movie.
True, true. The 300 slot.
Yeah.
As they call it these days.
Zack Snyder actually didn't get a slot this year.
No, slotless Snyder.
Yeah, he
had to wait a couple weeks. It's okay.
Yeah. So, first up, we're going to talk about Certified Copy.
Mm-hmm.
Then
Kiarostami.
Yep. Then Christopher Smith's Black Death.
Then?
Jojo Fukunaga.
Joji.
Fukunaga's
Jane Eyre. Starring Mr. Fassbender.
Yes. And then Battle Los Angeles.
Starring Aaron Eckhart.
Yep. So find your way through this podcast if there's a certain film you want to hear or don't want to hear. So
they are all very different in their own way. So definitely, if you have a preference, feel free to skip around.
Yes. So let's kick it off with Certified Copy. Now, you saw this at New York Film Festival.
I did.
Right?
So a while ago.
But it had its premiere at Cannes.
I mean, it's been around for a while. You know, this is a long time coming, especially a movie that's, you know, just internationally so high profile. You know, Abbas Kiarostami is one of the most celebrated Iranian directors of all time, certainly working nowadays. And this is a departure for him in a lot of ways. This is a romance. It's a meta-romance. It's kind of like a meta Before Sunset. You have Juliette Binoche starring as is that her name?
Who won the Best Actress.
Right, at Cannes. Yeah. And William Schamel, is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Who actually, his name is James Miller in the movie. This was his first real acting role. And we'll get into that later. Film acting. Right. And so that was kind of, that was an interesting choice by Kiarostami. And yeah, I mean, this is, you know, this isn't like, if you've seen his bigger movies, like, you know, Close Up comes to mind, of course. This is more polished than those and a lot different, but has the same resonance and the same heart and the same, you know, just kind of technical, prowess behind it, you know. And so I kind of walked away really loving this movie.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I really liked just the mood that he sets with it. It's very slow for anyone else that hasn't seen one of his films before, but I love that.
A lot of
there's talking. It feels like things happen in real time, which is nice. Almost, I mean, there's a few cuts in time, but like there's a scene where they're driving in a car and they show pretty much the whole drive.
Yeah, that's true. Like.
And you know, a lot of the restaurant scenes, I think there's two or three, they go to get coffee and then there's a long scene with them at the table.
Where the main actor James Miller, he walks away.
Yeah.
And we stay on Juliette Binoche with the owner of the restaurant. And that's the point at which the movie kind of starts to take a little bit of a turn in a very interesting way.
Well, first we'll set it up because I'm sure none of
anyone has seen
it. So the opening scene it's a static shot on a mic, and you realize it is this is James Miller, William Schmel's mm-hmm. character, who wrote a book.
He wrote a book called Certified Copy
and it's and the about, whole film is about copies, everything about the film's kind
and
of
in
about
the opening speech is what he says in the opening speech. It is kind of, he almost kind of dictates the theme of the film, which is to say, you know, are we at a point where the copy itself becomes more real than what it's copying? And mm-hmm. then the movie becomes kind of that exact ideal wrapped around, you know, the whole narrative, which is interesting. So.
Yeah. And then Juliette Binoche comes and sits down to view the speech he's giving and with her son. And then they meet up after, and it's kind of about their whole day out together.
Yeah, I mean, what's supposed to be just kind of a cup of coffee from a fan to, you know, the person that she really likes and really admires becomes kind of this long afternoon, and they end up deciding to kind of play these roles on a whim, and then they end up playing the roles just kind of throughout and reveal a lot about themselves
mm-hmm.
in the process.
Yeah. A few favorite moments. I mean, there's not really spoilers in here, I would say, so we can talk. I think one of my favorite scenes is when they meet an older couple and they're talking about what a structure, or it's like a, it's, I think it's a famous structure.
Right.
What that means. He was asking around because he doesn't believe it means a lot, and she does. And so they're asking around, and they meet up with this older couple, and the older gentleman pulls James Miller aside and says, you know, he could sense something's wrong, and he said just give her like a little touch on the shoulder and then like it'll change the whole day, and like little things like that,
right.
Which I really liked, because
some of them work and some of them don't, and like the whole movie's kind of just a lot of the movie's an argument between the two of them, and Juliette Binoche clearly has a zest for life and is kind of you know a lust for life. She's still kind of very in a lot of ways idealistic and optimistic, and clearly this writer James is more cynical, and so you kind of have that opinion, you know, opinions clashing with each other throughout. And it feels like, you know, almost a middle-aged movie from Kiarostami, kind of like Jim Jarmusch's The Limits of Control kind of felt the same way. And I mean, these aren't bad movies. These are movies that, you know, clearly the people making them are at a crossroads in their own lives, and so you have these two characters, in the case of Certified Copy, who represent kind of two sides of maybe the same coin. So, sure. You know, it's, if there's anybody you want to watch deal with their, you know, deal with inner turmoil, it's gonna, you know, Abbas Kiarostami is high up on that list for sure. It's beautiful the shot. He does amazing things with frames. There's an unbelievable shot towards the end of the film where Juliette Binoche is in a hotel, beautiful stone hotel in this small kind of village. I kind of was expecting to see George Clooney walk by on a mission to kill somebody. Yeah. That's how beautiful the village was. And then she kind of almost steps out of the frame a little bit, and you see, you know, a window within the frame that looks out on kind of another point of reference farther in the distance, and they hold on that for a very, very long time. There's a lot of that in the movie. There's kind of one of the prestigious shots, and it was in one of the initial posters, is she's looking into the mirror and the mirror becomes the camera. I mean, that's like just another meta thing that happens throughout the movie. There's a lot of conversation about plot and stuff, and it is very much a meta Before Sunset. So if you enjoy that type of movie, you know, kind of the budding of a romance or the breaking down of a romance throughout 90 minutes or, you know, 100 minutes, you're really going to enjoy this film.
Yeah, totally agree.
It's a romance at heart, I think. Yeah. And definitely one of, in my mind, one of Kiarostami's most accessible movies, without a doubt.
Yeah, I really have only seen close-ups, so I'm excited to kind of get into his catalog.
You know, like Taste of Cherry and stuff like that. This is more accessible just on a commercial level. But that, I mean, like we said, that's not even saying too much, especially when we talk about something like Battle Los Angeles, which is just like, ugh. But anyway.
It's quite the ramp up.
Right, yes. We're building up. We're building up to Breakdown.
Yes. So I think it's probably pretty hard to find if you're not in New York or LA. I could see it expanding, but probably just to major cities. I don't think it'll come. Right. So you'll probably see it on the Criterion Collection.
Criticism-wise, actually. Yes. One thing I was going to say is that I did not love William Schmell's performance in the film. I thought, just in terms of casting, it was an interesting idea to cast, you know, an opera singer, someone who is involved in the arts in another way, in a film that relies so much on acting. But casting him next to someone like Juliette Binoche, who just commands the screen in this movie, her characters, you know, maybe he's given a little bit more to do. And you know, just like you said, Juliette Binoche is just one of the best actresses around.
Her best performance since The Son of No One.
Oh, sure.
Listen to our Sunday's podcast.
My god! But she's much better here, to say the very least. But I just thought he was lacking at some point. Very, very pretty man. You know, very nice to look at, and you know, a very, very nice voice, but when it came to the really hard scenes, it felt like Juliette Binoche was kind of carrying him on her back. So that was a little bit of a letdown. But in general, it was a very impressive movie, I thought, overall.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, Juliette Binoche's performance is very subdued.
This is her movie.
It's a very subdued movie, so I think it fits. But with him, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, just it seemed like he was maybe at some points trying to do too much, and then at other points not trying to do enough. So.
Yep. But still highly recommended.
Yeah, check it out.
IFC Films, I think, put it out. So check to see.
Yeah, in that case, you'll probably be able to get it on the TV soon, if not right now. So look out for that.
All right, let's move on to another limited release.
That is also available on demand, I believe.
Yeah, from Magnolia.
Right.
So this is Christopher Smith's Black Death. This is a filmmaker who gave us Severance, which I have yet to see, but...
Well, it's a triangle.
Yeah, and the triangle, which is great. I noticed it took triangle down off from Martin Sindley.
Yes, yep.
Just sad. But
I know. I missed my window.
Yeah. But anyways, Black Death is a... what does it take place in during the Black Plague, right? Which is...
It takes place during the bubonic age. That, yeah. And it's not really, a type of word or whatever. But it's, while the bubonic plague outbreak is occurring... Mm. In the Middle Ages, and Sean Bean stars as Ulrich.
Yes.
And Eddie Redmayne.
I would say Eddie
as
Redmayne
Osmond.
Actually is the lead.
You call them the two leads, and they. Yeah. And Eddie Redmayne is a young monk who is in love with a young girl, but obviously that's forbidden, so that's a whole thing. And then Sean Bean comes in with his little troop of knights.
Yeah.
And they are
commissioned
they're looking to invade and depopulate this mysterious town in the moors that is apparently like demonic.
Is it a neuromancer?
Necromancer, right.
Not neuromancer.
There's a necromancer that's controlling the town. And and then Eddie Redmayne kind of for his own personal reasons to win back and find the girl that he loves leads Sean Bean and his group into the moors to where he knows this town is, and crazy things ensue.
Crazy things do. I mean, the good thing about this film, I think, is it always had me guessing what was going to happen next.
True,
And it had to keep all these tones, and I think it did it pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, it plays with two different kinds of genres. I mean, you have, a whodunit by way of The Name of the Rose going on, and then you also have, your B-horror movie camp. The Wicker Man is obviously the most... the original, or I mean, in terms of plot, I mean, both movies, the Wicker Man is the most closely associated. Did he talk about
that? I saw the New York City premiere, I guess it was the U.S. premiere, I guess, because I didn't show it. And Christopher Smith was there, and he had a Q&A about that, and actually a few other funny things I can talk about later, but it follows that, and I think it succeeds, I would say, overall.
Really enjoyable. I mean, there's a lot of things it has going for it. I mean, Sean Bean as one of the premier players is huge.
Yes.
And pardon the siren. This is New York City after all. Sean Bean, it's just great to see him lead, in a film like this and really command the screen. The guy's got such a screen presence.
A lot of reviews I've read haven't really been too hot on Eddie Redmayne.
Oh, really?
I thought he was okay. I didn't think it was great.
Yeah, I thought he was good. I thought he got the, he looks young and he looks meek kind of in his own way. But then also, I mean, I'll give you this. There's a turn he has to take at the end of the movie that I don't think he completely takes. And I think that's more the fault of, Smith, the director, and the writer allowing that, and the editor allowing that to make it into the final cut, really, because... It seemed kind of...
At the very end you're talking about.
Right. Okay, seemed kind of clear to me he didn't maybe have the look or to really take that turn.
He
it's such a turn, it's...
He gives this, same sullen face, the whole movie. And, for Sean Bean, if you go with the same face, that works for him because he's badass. But, I feel I don't know. There was a couple moments tell he was, trying to act.
In The Name of the Rose, Christian Slater plays that part, okay? And so he's this very boyish, young, at first idealistic... monk, and Sean Connery's kind of the Sean Bean character who's seen the world and blah blah blah. And I think that Eddie Redmayne gets it better than Slater did in the term that in the sense that Redmayne faces more kind of earlier on because he has this other side of him. He loves this girl, and he's struggling with the faith where Sean Bean isn't, where in the Name of the Rose, Sean Connery kind of was struggling a little bit. So it's a little nice shift, and I think Eddie Redmayne does more with the meat that he's given. And so I liked him. I mean, he's been good in things. He was in The Pillars of the Earth, which I caught about half of, and he kind of was...
rumored to be in War Horse.
He was in War Horse.
Not the movie.
I know, I thought he was in... He was cast in War Horse and then dropped out.
Oh, I don't know.
He dropped out of War Horse. I just knew. I thought that's exactly what he did. Anyway... And so, right, and he's in My Week with Marilyn,
and Hick.
Could there maybe have been a better Osmond? Yeah, but I think he definitely does the job. As for the rest of the cast, I think the acting in this movie is very, very capable. I mean,
yeah.
The I whole really like, Sean Bean's Ulrich's whole crew.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
You know, all cliches. You know, you have, you know, no different than, you know, the crew in Centurion or something like that.
I did kind of like how he gave a little bit something to each character, because I mean, there's a movie. Yeah, there's, like in Centurion, they don't really do really? That too much.
In Centurion, know. Is kind of the same thing. You have like the tough guy, the guy you know is gonna turn.
Yeah, I thought there was a little more, because like he, there's more, like even by the.
I mean, I'll say this: I like Black Death a lot more than Centurion, so I'm not trying to, not trying to defend Centurion as a whole. I'm just,
I mean, there's obviously death scenes will spoil, and you know, when Centurion, where it was, I thought they came off silly here. Right. I felt something. So I guess.
Right. I mean, well, this. I mean, the thing about this movie, and I guess this is. I mean, from what I've read of Christopher Smith's films, this is kind of the line he toes every time. Is there is a feeling of camp, but also a feeling of seriousness kind of going on throughout this film that he walks rather impressively, because, you know, there are scenes where you're laughing in enjoyment of how ridiculous things are, and then there are other scenes where you're actually thinking about some things and you don't feel like you're being like, you know, duped or anything that. So I thought that was kind of impressive, because it sneaks up on you a little bit, and then by the end you really care about the fate of some of these characters. And for me, it was a little surprising, because I wasn't expecting that. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to, I haven't seen Severance, but compared to Triangle, Triangle's a lot more campy, just because the whole time travel thing inherently is. Right. But yeah, you're right. This has a lot more serious.
And like the actors play completely straight, of course. Yeah. You know, where it's in turn, like, you know, Dominic West. I don't know that you could call his performance playing it straight.
Yeah.
And you know, and stuff like that. So there was different tones going on in that film. So I definitely really, really, really was kind of captivated. And so I was just impressed. And I really hope this helps Christopher Smith continue to kind of get more notice and maybe one day make a movie for, you know, more than these kind of micro budgets, but these, you know, these small budgets that he seems to be working with.
They, Jordan Hoffman, who hosted the UGO screening, said, when he talked to him, like, he told me that, like, there's a lot of, like, big movies that he wants to do. So hopefully he'll keep getting this recognition. And he said there's a lot of crazy ideas. I was looking at the score. I really liked, actually.
The score was good.
Yeah, Christian Henson, who also did Triangle and his other films. Yeah, I thought, like, he said during the Q&A that.
What did you like about the score? Just in general,
there was like a lot of like the during the tense scenes. I thought it worked well. Mm-hmm. Like, there's quite a bit we can talk about later. And it's just like it's kind of moving throughout, and it's not just over like in a lot of these like Centurion and other movies it's kind of subtle and just running.
I think ever since Gladiator there's been a tendency to kind of, you know, really, it's almost in a weird way it almost romanticizes what's going on. You have like a lot of choir going on in the back, a lot of like, you know, Lisa Gerrard like voices happening.
Yeah, and he said during the Q&A that he said during the final sound mix, like, you only get, you know, for an independent movie like this, that they kind of had to be on schedule, I guess. Well, I guess big budget, too. But he said the one thing you would change would be give more time to the sound mix, because he said he had to decide, like, the final sound mix in about 2 days.
Oh, wow.
And so he said, you know, he at the last minute, he said he, you know, took out a lot of music that Henson made, but just to give more weight to the scenes. And he said, you know, if in the future he would like to...
Have more time to listen to it. Yeah, that doesn't seem like enough time at all.
And he even said he wouldn't say specifically, but there are like some moments that he thought didn't work with the music that he would have liked to take in.
Really?
It's kind of funny to hear a director
admit to that. That is interesting.
But yeah, I mean, there are a lot of spoilers we could talk about if we want to.
Yeah, we can go into it for a minute. Sure.
All right. Well, first, I there's one, you're kind of waiting for a big action scene with a movie like this, and I thought that they, you know, this is a very R-rated film, and I thought that one scene, the ambush scene, was pretty good, pretty well done.
I totally agree. I thought that, I mean, we were talking about this before, and you said that he had mentioned he used less blood than maybe one would expect from watching the film, and I actually knew that before I watched the film, so when I went into it, I was aware of that, and I was kind of impressed at how it still worked really well. Yeah, I mean,
the sound design is really great.
I kind of felt like Robin Hood. Ridley Scott's Robin Hood was kind of like that too. There isn't really a lot of blood in that movie either. Yeah. Of course, that's PG-13, but I think in the same way, that film also succeeds because of the editing and because of, you know, things like the music and just the choreography. In Black Death, actually, I thought was surprisingly impressive.
Yeah, yeah. He said, you know, would you rather see fake blood? Like, he didn't give an example, but he said a lot of the recent Hollywood films you've seen. But
well, Centurion.
Or yeah, Centurion. Yeah, I mean, or a lot of fake blood, or huh? Would you rather just not see enough blood? So that was a choice he had to make, and he said he'd rather.
Right, I don't even know what the answer to that question is personally. You know, I don't know. You know, I think. You know, I think Black Death did it well, and I think in the terms of the battle scenes, I think Centurion did it well in terms of this fake blood. So, I think it's a choice, and I think both of those films succeed in their own right. But I think for the tone that this film is going for, in you know, I think if you have a lot of fake blood in Black Death, people might think that you're going for more camp than maybe you're really going for. Is I guess what I'm saying? Yeah. Where you know, and so. In respect to what it seemed like was trying to happen in the film, less blood was the right decision by Smith. So, I appreciated the brevity of that.
Yeah, and then obviously the you know the town they get to it, and right, I really, right, in right, terms right. of supporting performances, I really like the town leader guy
who's kind I liked
like
him.
The really big guy. Like he played it really charming at the beginning, and then the complete
very nice cast. I thought you know you're right. He's huge, which was nice. And then his wife, or his, you know, you think it's his wife, who is just, you know, kind of like, you know, if the people in the Crucible were really witches, that's kind of like who she is, which is interesting. So, you know, do with that information what you will, but I really, really, really enjoyed her performance as well.
Yeah, and since we're in spoilers, I guess we can talk about the, you know, the final... Not the very final, but, you know, there's this kind of if the village wasn't so village to the next level kind of type thing with and someone brought that up in the Q&A, actually, which was funny. But, it kind of takes a turn that you're almost expecting, but it kind of goes to
how do you mean? What turn exactly?
Just the end when they capture they get captured.
Oh, the end. Yeah,
like that whole 20.
Yeah, I mean, here's one thing I'll say, though, in terms of just... screenwriting I kind of didn't buy was they go to this town, right? The mission is to go to this town, draw out the necromancer, and kill the necromancer, right? That's what Sean Bean and his group is doing, with Eddie Redmayne leading the way. They get to the town and everyone's really, really nice, and they believe it, and then they drink their alcohol and then they all get poisoned, and I mean, it kind of seemed like if you were Sean Bean and you were Knight, if you were Ulrich this night, and your whole mission was to go to a town where you knew, and he mentions this, where other knights went in, as powerful and as, you know, as smart as you were, they went into the town and got duped and never came back. Wouldn't you go in kind of like ready, kind of with your guns drawn, kind of like, well, they're going to do something that's like a little deceiving, because, you know, if they didn't, obviously it would be easier than this. And then they go and like, oh, they're nice. And like he even says, he's like, keep your eyes open. Like, but like then he drinks their alcohol. Very, very. I thought that was kind of sloppy. I didn't really. Luckily, it was so far into the movie, I kind of just tried not to think about how sloppy it was. And
looking back, I definitely can see that.
But I mean, aside from that, for a movie like this, I thought it was very kind of smartly written and tensely written.
Yeah.
And tensely directed, actually.
Yeah.
And sparsely directed. I mean, clearly you could almost tell, but based on the way that the movie shot and edited, that time was of the essence, because there is not an abundance of shot selection in the film, so you kind of get the feeling he was really shooting for coverage, which is impressive. Yeah. You know, because you never get the sense that things were missing in the movie.
Yeah, he said the shoot schedule was really, really
tight,
short.
Of course,
really
I can imagine. Yeah.
But yeah,
do you know,
I mean,
what the budget is? No, right?
No, I
think it was a couple million.
There's no way. I think he said 4 or 5.
Yeah, it could be more than that.
And then,
enough to build that one set.
Yeah, and then, you know, the Sean Bean death sequence, I thought was...
Oh, that's like one of the highlights
insane.
Of the movie. You know?
And another good use of sound design. They really didn't show... Cause, okay, his for those listening, he gets... he said, they say bring out the horses, and he gets his limbs
Braveheart
wrapped
style.
Up. Yeah, wrapped
Braveheart
up.
Braveheart style, yeah.
In the horses as they pull in different directions and snaps and
there's a word for what that is.
Yeah, there is.
I don't know what it is. But anyway, and right before he does it, Eddie Redmayne comes up to him and tells and Ulrich tells Osmond Eddie Redmayne to open his shirt, and he opens his shirt and Sean Bean has the plague.
Yes.
And he's, you know, he has this whole I am death speech, and it's nice, it's great, and then he gets his, all of his limbs ripped off, and the sound effect does all the work because you don't actually see it happen, and then you just have the, you know, the fake limbs running around with the horses. And right before that scene is another kind of crazy scene where Eddie Redmayne kills the girl he loves because he thinks that she has come back from the dead, courtesy of the necromancer, who they think is the necromancer of this village. And then you think this necromancer maybe convinces Osmond that she was actually alive and she was just drugged and it was all a ruse, and you don't know if it's true or not, but it probably is. And
yeah. The one thing I did think was funny,
and that pushes that ending, which we'll talk about in a minute, but
was how there's two people left in this little contraption they have, and they get out, and I thought that was a very quick turn in terms of the village running away. And them taking over them and then being able to escape. I don't know. That was the only thing.
Yeah, that's another kind of, you know, like nobody's watching them when they're getting out. I mean, there's a lot of things that are kind of, I mean, sloppy. But I mean, you know, that's where a movie like this gets away with stuff like this, because it's, if you're towing the line between camp and, you know, real drama, you can maybe get away with some narrative slips because it's, at the end, it is kind
of
campy.
One of the ballsy things Christopher Smith did, I thought, was they introduced this machine that they're going to put the necromancer in to torture him, and then they never use it, which I thought was kind of funny. I mean, they use it to transport, but not to torture anyone.
Don't they use it at the end, the tall guy?
No, they don't, actually.
When he sticks his head?
Yeah, but they don't torture him. It's just used to transport him.
Oh, yeah. So we were talking about that
at the screening. I thought it was kind of funny.
That is interesting. That's right. Good point.
At this thing. We'll never use it. So the ending. I definitely agree with you. I thought the film could have just ended after they got back to Popedom or whatever.
Right.
But there's a little epilogue of Eddie Redmayne grown up, but doesn't look that grown up. But he has long hair, so I guess that means
he's long aged. Hair. I mean, that's how you know.
Yeah, at least
that's how you know.
And he's kind of now, was he part of the church or he was just a bounty?
No, I think what happens then is like he returns, and then I think kind of becomes something of a knight, you know, or a crusader of some kind. And he runs around town looking for
revenge.
The witch who, you know, who kind of made him, I guess, kill the love of his life, and it's hallucinating apparently out of rage. He
gets the wrong girl,
and he's just killing, you know, people. sentencing, you know, a bunch of innocent women to death, and that's the end of the movie. And I mean, it's a bold ending, but I don't think it's particularly necessary. I don't think it particularly fits, and I don't think it's particularly well acted. So those are just three things that I wish maybe had been recognized in the editing room, and you snip it right out, and then you know, you have a slightly shorter, slightly more enjoyable film.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. Well, Black Death, you can find it on VOD and in theaters now. So
let's move on to more costumes.
Yes.
Less violence.
A little less.
A little less. A lot less.
A lot less. None.
No violence. There's a little violence.
That's true.
There's a fire.
Yeah, then this is the 29th adaptation of Jane Eyre.
Yes, it is.
Joji, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Fukunaga, who did an NYU graduate who made a short and turned that short into the feature film known as Sin Nombre, which came out in 2009. And now he, thanks to Focus Features, again, he got a... bigger budget, I think. Must have been. And some definitely high profile names. Michael Fassbender stars as Mr. Rochester, Jamie Bell as St. John Rivers, and Mia Wasikowska
as Jane Eyre.
And then Sally Hawkins has a small role.
Yeah, but she's against typecast.
Yes. And Judi Dench.
Which was nice to see her play kind of a mean old witch, not Judi Dench, Sally Hawkins.
Yeah, and I'm going in. I mean, before I think this is your first viewing of the Jane Eyre.
I have read bits and pieces of the novel, and I know what happens.
I read it in high school, but I don't remember any of it. And I think, you know, just right off the bat, that this is one of my favorite movies of the year, and I think it's my favorite movie of the year so far.
Yeah.
What I loved about Cary Fukunaga's adaptation is that. It was a slow burn, but everything felt so tense, like the way, you know, down from the cinematography, which is just beautiful.
Yeah.
Who did, yeah.
I mean, deliberate, up. You know, sparse and deliberate everything in the film.
I mean, and the editing, I thought, let's see, who did the cinematography? Adriana Goldberg.
Right. And who's done a lot. And then the music also by Dario Marinelli is also surprisingly sparse. If you saw Atonement, it's the opposite of that.
He did City of Men. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, yeah, so this is, we're talking about Adriana Goldman, here. And so, I mean, if you saw Sin Nombre, it's, you know, that was sparse as well. This is a much different kind of sparse. There's a lot of candlelit scenes, you know, taking a page out of the Barry Lyndon book, of course. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it all fits in that same tone. I mean, this is reserved, introverted, you know, England with these characters who are suffering inside, and Michael Fassbender for kind of a past that he can't really escape. And of course, you know, for those who've read the book or seen one of the 28 other movies, you know what that is. So it's not really much of a spoiler, but you know, Jane Eyre is this girl who grew up kind of under violence, under violent hands her whole life, but has an independent fire burning inside of her. She's learned to suppress it, but it's still there, of course. And Edward Rochester, Michael Fassbender, brings that out in her, and that really comes to fruition really in their first dialogue together. And there's not a lot of dialogue in this movie at all, which is another kind of incredible thing about it. But in their first real dialogue, their first real exchange, the camera turns and turns and turns around on Michael Fassbender's face until finally you're forced to see who it is, and it takes literally 2 minutes to see this. And then finally, Jane sits down across from Michael Fassbender, and they have this just amazing exchange, you know, very small exchange about their encounter they had just had before, where she accidentally had him thrown off a horse, and he's very amused by her because of her spunk, which she lets slip. And you can tell in her expressions that she's surprised she's letting it slip. And I mean, that's just good acting. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I mean, they're...
I don't know if they rehearsed, but it just seemed like...
They said no, they didn't do it.
That's
much,
which is amazing.
All.
Yeah,
amazing,
I mean, because it seemed... Especially for something like this, where everything's so... You know, everything's so done up. I mean, the costumes and the makeup and the sets and the music and everything is very specific. And the fact that it was shot the way it is, I mean, there's some handheld shots. It was shot on film, which is nice to see, actually, because, you know, we were debating whether it was shot on film or digital. It feels digital at some points, probably because of the handheld and stuff. There's a great someone handheld scene, or at least a Steadicam scene, where she's running through the moors after, nice. Of course, Rochester reveals his horrible secret, and that is just a very beautifully shot scene that mixes shaky cam stuff with these great aerial shots of her kind of in the fetal position, almost reverting back to her, who she was before she kind of learned how to survive in the moors. So, a lot to admire.
Yeah, and I thought her performance, I mean, and she's had a short career so far, but I think this is...
Well, she continues to just stand out in every film, be it Alice in Wonderland, which was a disappointment, or The Kids Are Right, which, you know, you have, you know, if there's anything that's great about that movie, it's the acting, you know, because you just have so many performers, and she held her own with them all, and this is no different. Michael Fassbender, same thing, and he's got a big year coming up, so this is just such a great start. Hopefully films like X-Men do not deter, you know, and hopefully you know, big blockbusters like X-Men do not deter kind of fans, indie fans, from the fact that he's coming out with films like Shame, the next Steve McQueen movie, later this fall, and just a bunch of other films. So look out for those. I mean, what stood out for you, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, her performance obviously was the first thing.
Out of the two of them, who carries it more? It's a hard decision.
I think they're perfect together. I think it's their chemistry that really carries the whole film. Going in, I was kind of expecting a dry, you know, period drama, but I knew that Cary Fukunaga would bring something to it, and I didn't. But I didn't know that, you know, that I guess that I now that I know that Fassbender, I think when it was announced, I wasn't really because he was probably shooting it last year, but I knew about them. But I thought, I didn't know if, you know, they would be one of the highlights.
Well, there's a lot to be worrisome about. I mean, it's a sophomore effort, right? Yeah. Which can always go one way or the other, of course. You know, when you give a younger director more money and, of course, you know, more responsibilities and all that, and then it's just Jane Eyre. I mean, a lot of people would argue it's never been successfully done, really. I mean, you can't really point to a decidedly impressive adaptation. You know, like, you can point to, with Pride and Prejudice, you can point to the miniseries with Colin Firth and Jennifer Ely, or I think it was Jennifer Ely. You can point to that and be like, that is, you know, for most people, the penultimate Pride and Prejudice.
Actually, and you can, you know, going in, I was kind of expecting something like that, but I thought this had, I've seen that, unfortunately, but
right. Yeah, you did not love that. But you know what I mean?
But I know what you mean.
Like, as classics go, like,
that's true.
The Laurence Olivier Wuthering Heights, that is, even though it chops that book up 1,000 times, it is a classic in its own right. You know, the way it's lit, the way it's shot, the way it's acted, it is a classic in its own right. But I can't really point to a Jane Eyre like that, and I think this is that one, I think. Yeah. You know, obviously, we won't know for a few years, but I mean, they just have scenes. The scene when they confess their love to each other,
yes.
For example, and I guess we'll just start kind of trailing to spoilers, which, I mean, spoilers for something like this, you know, they're coming up, but it's a classic. You know, you're not going to really lose much. It's a classic novel. I knew about it when I went in and didn't really ruin anything for me. But anyway, if you don't want to know anything, you know, stop listening now. Skip ahead about 10 minutes. But that scene where he confesses her love and asks her to marry her, he asks her to marry him, and that's like the first time really that Dario Marinelli's very subdued and subtle score rises up to like the its peaks. It just gets you. It got me, and he shoots it close, Fukunaga, and his cinematographer.
Very personal feel to the whole thing.
Very personal feel. I agree. A lot of wides, a lot of close-ups.
Yeah, I mean, some of the camera work.
A lot of rack focus.
Yeah, I was gonna say a specific shot where Isabel, who is his? Anyways, he brings Michael Fassbender. Mr. Rochester has like friends over.
I think it's Imogen Poots.
Imogen Poots, right? I was trying to think of her character. Right. But there's like a party scene where you know, Jane Eyre's there and she feels out of place, and he does this rack focus that's just beautiful, like on Imogen Poots, and then,
well, Imogen Poots, for those who don't know, plays the character Mrs. Fairfax.
Ingram.
Blanche Ingram, who. Who everybody thinks, or is it Lady Ingram who it is? Anyway,
no, it's
well, yeah, we'll say Blanche Ingram is who it is. Yeah, I just want to make sure that Imogen Poots is the girl.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, is who everyone believes Rochester is going to marry because she's of his class and all this, but then of course it turns out that he's in love with Jane Eyre, who is a poor girl who was kind of brought up an orphan. Anyway, she's at this party. Fassbender, Rochester is talking to all the other high class people, and though she's been invited, no one's talking to her, and the camera moves around her and you see her in focus, and then other people start talking about her, one of them Ingram, and the focus racks to all of those people, and you literally feel the space in between Jane Eyre and everyone around her with that one simple move. I mean, a move that you could have done with your camera 75 years ago.
Right,
and, you know, Fukunaga does it now, and it is just as effective. You know, no green screen or anything like that.
Yeah.
And it does the desired effect mightily. I thought Jamie Bell was impressive. I kind of wish there was a little bit more of him.
Yeah.
I do believe he's in more of the book, of course. I think he gets a little shortchanged at the end there. He has one scene where his character twists quickly, because he emerges as a nice guy who's going to take care of Jane.
As a brother figure,
you keep hearing. And then, of course, kind of not too unexpectedly, it turns out he wants more, and Jane refuses to give that to him, and he becomes domineering all in the space of 35 minutes, 35 seconds. That, I think, could have been a little bit cleaner, a little bit more led up to. But, I mean, I guess, you know, you can't win them all.
Right.
And
I mean, for a movie that I think it was reaching 2 hours, right?
Yeah, I think it's exactly 2 hours.
Yeah, I wanted to keep going.
Yeah, I think it kind of flew by, especially for a movie like this. I mean, you know, closest to compare it to is Joe Wright's Pride and Prejudice with Keira Knightley, which is a very accessible movie, and I enjoy that one as well. But this, I think, I don't know. There's something about this movie that's more technically profound, and in that way. You know, in its silences, there's a lot of talking in the Pride and Prejudice, and in fairness, there's a lot of talking in Jane Austen, but there's something more technically appeasing and visually appeasing about this film that I think kind of stands this one up
Yeah.
Against that one.
Yes, I have to agree. Mm. All right. You want to get to the battle?
Ugh. At this point, I just... Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So, Jane Eyre. Definitely check it out.
Three solid films in this.
Focus Features is slowly ramping it out, you know?
Yeah, and it's been doing well, actually, which is great to see.
So,
check Pride and Prejudice did well.
That's true.
So, we'd love to see a little bit of love.
All right, so let's get to Battle Los Angeles.
Let's do it.
Now, this is...
You hit me with the synopsis. What happens in Battle Los Angeles? It's very... Very complex.
There's a Marine platoon.
Okay.
And then there's aliens come, and then they fight them.
And where does this alien invasion take place?
All over the world. But in the film, it's in Battle Los Angeles.
Oh, it's in...
That's where the battle takes
place.
It's
in Los Angeles.
Yep.
Okay.
So, now...
That's
Dan,
interesting.
Were you a fan of this film?
No. No. No, it was not. I mean... Okay, so to be fair here, I mean, you know, I will say this for the film. It's mightily marketed. Mightily. It's one of the most honest marketing campaigns. I mean, if we're going to talk about honest marketing campaigns, I mean, you know...
Well, they didn't show any dialogue in the trailer. I guess there's not enough dialogue in the
movie. But it's not, I mean, this is a very honest marketing campaign. I mean, whereas Jane Eyre wants to sell you on this whole dark past of... You know, Rochester, but like not in the way it really is, which is to say, you know, sure, yeah. The dude was married, right. You know, once before, but like to say, to like kind of very vaguely suggest that he's a werewolf or something
that. Yeah, true. Not true. This is definitely.
Battle of Sanders is like, hey, aliens invade. People fight the aliens. Americans fight the aliens. Black Americans, white Americans, girl Americans, boy Americans, Latinos. Everybody. Because America's diverse. And when people attack our country, we win. And hey, that's exactly what the movie is. And, you know, what is it? Aaron Eckhart. His name is...
Michael Nance.
Michael Nance, thank you. Because I would have never remembered that. Literally, I forgot while I was watching. Wow. And I did like Aaron Eckhart, actually. Yeah. I thought he held his own as the kind of hero in the movie. And he's retiring because he's seen too much in battle.
Yeah.
He's a world-weary officer. Okay.
With a hidden past.
With a tortured past. It's not hidden at all. Everybody knows it.
That's true.
And they doubt him. They doubt his abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And the alien invasion comes, and he needs to step up and prove to all these doubting young soldiers that he can make the calls that others refuse to make.
Yes.
And that's what the movie's about. The movie's about making decisions. Okay? Because a good Marine makes decisions in the fog of war.
Yes. So... so like let's compare, you know, so Liebesman's style.
Liebesman.
All right, that's not giving him any more credit than he deserves. No, I'm just kidding. I guess you could say you hate this movie.
Okay, no, I didn't hate them. Yes, I hated it.
You hated it.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I guess just for lack of a better word, I wholeheartedly disliked it.
Oh, okay, wow.
I wholeheartedly disliked it. Yes.
Yeah, I came out just kind of shrugging my shoulders. Yeah, okay, that was a ride, something, right. And that was it. But no, I will say now. Okay, that's the biggest thing in this movie is I think that comes off right off the bat and doesn't let up for 2 hours is this fast style. It's even. Cuts faster than any Michael Bay movie I've ever seen.
Right.
You know, every shot there's something zooming in or cutting or switching or
right.
blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Now, what did you
think? Peter Berg should be jealous.
Yeah,
of this
did
movie.
You think that hurt or helped the film?
Well, no, look, honestly, at this point, I don't really have a problem with the whole shaky cam thing. I don't think this was poorly done necessarily in that way. I mean, you know, I get it. It's got the whole Black Hawk Down documentation of an event thing. And actually, Jordan Hoffman pointed this out in his review. A good point, though, to be made about it is that Black Hawk Down really happened. It's a real military thing, and they clearly spent a lot of time documenting how that was such a difficult situation, and how these Marines and these Army men were literally trapped, and why they were trapped. Whereas this movie, by Somalian, you know, warlords, and just civilians, but in this movie. The severe lack of that kind of information really hurts it because, yeah, it looks real, I guess, because the camera's shaking, but it's Independence Day. Do you know what I mean? And there's no jokes, there's no comedy, there's no lightening of the mood. And so all of that, you know, and like I said, Hoffman, you know, Jordan Hoffman pointed to some of this in his review. I do agree with. I mean, it's just so poor. I mean, you have, and like, oh, and, see, okay, oh, you, I'm let me refer to my notes.
I
wrote down a couple notes. Okay, I'm gonna run through my little jots.
See,
okay?
I didn't think
Battle of LA talking points. Not there's not much.
Go, when you go.
Okay, ready one. You can't see that much. Okay,
up the action.
You can't see that much. And like I said, I didn't hate the shaky cam, but there are action sequences where you can't actually see that much. I never really got a sense of what the aliens looked like.
Yeah.
You know, like, that kind of bothered me. You never really, like, in War of the Worlds and movies like that, you get a scene where people are like, this is what we're dealing with. And that scene in this movie is, like, a very awkward, shaky, you can't really see the alien, it's in the dark. Bridget Moynihan has this horrible line about being a veterinarian. She's like, oh, I can deal with this alien because I deal with animals.
I also think the thing is that I got a sense of what they were, but they just weren't interesting. Like, it wasn't like an alien type thing.
All right, I'm gonna go on.
Alien, as in here we go. Scott's alien.
It feels rushed. The pacing's good because it doesn't stop, but it doesn't stop because there's nothing to stop for. All right, so that's a problem. No clear sense of time. There's a bomb that's gonna be dropped in 3 hours, 10 minutes in the movie, and then it's like 20 minutes later, they have an hour, and then an hour later, they have 10 minutes, and then 15 minutes later, they have 5 minutes. So that doesn't make any sense. You know, and I guess you can cheat if the movie's solidly entertaining, but it was not, so that was a problem. Too much hoorah, not enough of actually Aaron Eckhart having moments to become a person, which was a shame. They have that whole retreat hell thing, which they explain that, but they don't explain the aliens? Really?
Well, it's
that they're fighting.
They're coming. They're coming for water, Dan.
Okay, and here we go. Thank you very much. Because water. Really with the water. Again with the water. Okay, let's go through the list. Signs?
Oh, yeah.
It was water?
Yeah.
Okay. War of the Worlds? It was water. Every alien nation? Water. The Adjustment Bureau? Water. Pretty much any movie where there's some sort of entity that isn't human, what is the caveat? What's like the thing where it's like, oh, why? Like, how do we beat them? Why are they here? Blah blah blah. Water. Can we just leave our water alone? I get it. Oxygen is precious. I get it. H2O. It's a weird combo. Can we not find another one? Can we not find? People make fun of James Cameron for the unobtainium thing, right? In Avatar.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I know. Unobtainium is unoriginal. But I think it was meant to be made fun of because of shit like this, where water is just used because that's there. Oh, it's like water. Oh, water. We have a lot of water. Oh, water. Yeah. And then, like every other movie, and this is spoilers, I won't get into this yet. And then my last thing, though, which is not a spoiler, is that Los Angeles. Who cares about Los Angeles? I mean, seriously, though. Like, Los Angeles isn't a real city. I mean, there's a part of Los Angeles. There's a metropolis.
Well, the crew was close to that, so they decided.
In Los Angeles. But, like, Los Angeles was Independence Day. Every Roland Emmerich movie, there's, like, a huge Los Angeles scene. And you watch Los Angeles get destroyed. And how many people actually care about that? Like, there's a scene where they go, if we lose Los Angeles, like, we're done. That would not happen. Like, you know, it's not the center of commerce.
Yeah.
Nothing is the center of... First of all, nothing is the center of commerce anymore because of things like the internet.
Yeah.
So that's a whole nother thing. But, like...
I should have been hacking the internet.
I'm just saying that there's a lot of loose ends that they get away with not getting to because they don't get to anything. And another thing, and the final thing, is when you have to write the names of all of your characters as subtitles instead of actually introducing them organically, that's a problem. Especially when it's like fucking 15 of them. And I don't know what any of their names were because they're introduced for 2 minutes. There's like a thing like one of them's got a pregnant wife.
All right.
One of them's getting married.
Brother,
one of them is from Nicaragua. Like, or Nigeria, rather, sorry. One of them is Michelle Rodriguez. You know what I mean? And it's just like...
By the way, my audience cheered when Michelle Rodriguez came on screen.
I love Michelle Rodriguez. Like, and I love John August's tweet when he goes, I see they got Michelle Rodriguez for the Michelle Rodriguez part.
Yeah.
Totally. And she kills it because, you know, that's what she was born to play. But the movie around her does not kill it as much.
Yeah, I kind of want to nitpick, too, if we can...
Go.
Okay.
Please,
nitpick. So, So obviously, when there's announcing a massive meteor strike, that the beach is completely full of surfers and stuff.
I don't even want to.
I did like that one shot he had with the surfer. If we're gonna get, like, do you remember that shot? It was the only still shot of the movie. Not still, but the only not shaky part of the movie where it's like a helicopter zoom.
But that's the thing. It's like it says it starts really quickly with right before they're about to attack, and then it goes less than 24 hours to the attack. And then
what do you think of?
You find out that they've been reporting all these meteor showers, and the army's like, "Oh, they're meteor showers. Like, let's just get the troops to take care of it." It's like, I'm pretty sure that if there was that magnitude of meteor showers hitting, this country, at least this world that I'm living in, that we're living in right now, would be reacting a little bit differently. And I don't know how many people would be catching waves,
right?
Like Soul Surfer, like, you know. But anyway,
And that's then a whole other thing. I do kind of like the spoilers, but before we get into spoilers, quickly, like, oh no, I guess we can
talk. You want to just jump into it?
Spoilers from here on out, I think you get a sense. I would say it is a decent, a little less than decent blockbuster.
I would not.
I guess decent's too strong. I wasn't technically bored in the movie. I guess that's the highest praise I can give it.
Wow. All right.
Well, like, you have to, I mean,
I can see that on the DVD cover. I wasn't technically bored with this movie. But Jordan, like, Ralph, the film stage.
You have to kind of give him, I don't know, credits to
him. I don't have to give him anything.
No, I'm just saying, for being so, like, in your face, like, unabashedly.
Right, okay, insane. Yeah. I mean, I have a line that I will quote to defend the movie, and I said this to you already, and the line is, it is impressive. It was impressive to me while watching that. My mouth was agape at how brazen the movie is. I mean, it is literally, like, if you've seen the Green Berets, for example, it's a great example. Green Berets, 60s, it was like the anti-culture, counterculture movie, you know what I mean? It was like John Wayne was in it, and it was like the Green Berets. Fucking, let's fight. You know, we're Americans. Let's fight. You know what I mean? Let's fight this war and let's win this war. That's what soldiers do. That's what Americans do. Patriotism. Like, that's this movie. This is a movie where it's like, you know, no matter land nor sea, blah, 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 blah. I mean, you know, these aliens come in. And I do not mean to demean the military in any way, obviously. Like, you know, much respect to everybody who serves, of course, but like, this movie should be seen, I think, as kind of an insult to that ideal, because it's like you have a serious attack occurring and, like, there's no sense of regiment, you know, there's no sense of what these people are really doing, and that's the biggest difference with Black Hawk Down. Like, I feel like with Black Hawk Down, when you watch that movie, at the end of the movie, you get a sense of what those people really had to do to survive. Like, they had to plan shit out. Like, most of the movie is them talking out stuff. Like, how are we going to get 50 feet to save Ewan McGregor's character?
Yeah, in this movie, they're like, oh, we got to get the point beats.
Like,
all right, let's
do it. In this movie, it's like, Aaron Eckhart's like, fuck it, I'm going to take this grenade, I'm going to run down, and I'm going to, like, do it like a juke and throw it into the pool. And
oh, I love, by the way.
Which, I mean, is entertaining.
Well, no, but it's funny that grenade, like, he was sitting next to the pool, whatever. Throws the grenade in, and it kind of explodes, but he's still standing next to it, kind of. And then there's a scene where they also use a grenade, and it makes, like, the biggest explosion I've ever seen. It's just funny how, and, you know.
Well, bro, it's water. Like, okay, we haven't established water is the problem solver. The name of this movie should just been Battle Water.
When the alien went in there, in the water, did he, like, disappear? I was wondering about that scene.
I don't know.
Anyways. So let's get
water
spoilers.
Is like there was their fuel.
Their fuel, but not like
the. Right, I don't think they're gonna things. Die or something. Like, it's not like science.
So spoilers. Let's get into them.
Spoilers. Yeah, let's get into them.
So I kept thinking throughout the movie that these are not actually very smart aliens, because let's pretend they've been planning this attack for however many years.
You know, well, okay, millions of years. Yeah. Go.
Keep going. And honestly, if they only got about, you know, 6 miles in, or how many miles inland did they get in the span of kind of not that smart of
it. Santa Monica, sort of, how far Santa Monica
gets. Like, not that far. And then, like, so the final scene is Aaron Eckhart, you know, there's these drones that are catching any missile that comes in.
The drone. Well, he's lasering.
Yeah.
Okay, well, no. And before we go into this, lasering the center command.
Right.
Okay. Central commands in these movies. Do we have a central command? Okay, like, if we're fighting a war, right? like, I guess, like, the Pentagon.
Yeah.
If you bomb the Pentagon, but would that, like, that wouldn't shut down everything? Like, if these aliens are so smart, right? These aliens come down to Earth. They've been planning this, presumably, for fucking ever, right? They come down to Earth with their drones and their robot alien things, and they transform into fly, and they fly, and you're like, oh, they can't fly. Oh, they can fly. And by the end of the day, they have like a cerebral thing where it's like, oh, well, if you just, the cerebellum, like, oh, if you just blow that up, then everything else drops off. Like, it was like that Independence Day as well. I think in War of the Worlds, I might be wrong about that, but like, that is, can we put that thing to rest? Like, if aliens are so smart, then why do they have, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, just the way, if you want to get into it, nitty gritty, like the way the internet works, that's how the internet used to work. And then they realize that if everyone else, you know, then,
right?
Yeah, and so us as like humans are already,
system, you know,
yeah, capital, exactly,
yeah, exactly.
And we're already smarter than the aliens. Just in
that's
that
my
aspect.
Point.
But
like, and then so everyone's like, oh, they're smart. No, they're not. Clearly, because there's a central command. Like in every movie, kind of, you know, going with the whole zombie thing. You know, Adam Quigley brought the whole zombie thing. You know, if there was a zombie thing, we would not. What the character in every alien invasion movie now until forever should do first and foremost is like, before we do anything, do they have a central command? Because this can be over in 5 minutes if we just blow out that central command. And then if there's not, then you have a real movie.
Right.
Is what I'm saying.
And I kind of also love... Well, anyway, so getting finishing that point is just...
Right.
So it takes, you know, one missile and then...
Everything ends.
Done. Yeah, and it's like...
Really, boom.
There's nothing
like,
else.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nothing, huh? And like, they establish their ground soldiers too.
Yeah.
And but then like, they all just disappear too.
Yeah.
Like, they shoot a few after it gets exploded. Yeah. They're like, oh, there's... the ground soldiers, and they shoot like four, and like, all right, we're done. Everyone else, they retreat.
Yeah.
What? What do you mean they retreat? They were winning by a lot. Like,
and they're also attacking every major city, presumably where no one else knows
this,
about.
I love this.
Command.
This is the money line of all of these movies. Tell everybody else what we did. Oh, we win. Because everybody else is going to have the same measure of success that fucking Aaron Eckhart. They actually name drop John Wayne in this movie. Made me want to punch myself in the face. Like, that was a John Wayne moment. Oh, was it? Was it a John Wayne moment? Yeah, we get it. We get it. Oh, my God.
I didn't like it, but there was a scene in the film where... they are trying to find, you know, the weak point of the alien as well. What do you think of that? Too gross? You know,
no, I thought it was... Did they find it?
No.
They reference it again, though.
Yeah, well, yeah. They're, at the end, when he gets on the bus, he's like, oh, just shoot this point, and he'll do it. And then he takes him out in one hit. Like, the one of the...
Oh,
soldiers.
Yeah.
But
okay.
It was... I thought it took them that long to find it, because they're like, let's peel back to the next layer of the alien, like...
Yeah, like do you remember the scene in Independence Day? That's, like, an iconic kind of scene in that movie, where it's, like, the dudes... making the incision and the thing opens, it's like, whoa!
Yeah.
Not here. And Bridget Moynihan, wow.
I don't know what she was doing.
Come on.
Yeah.
I like you.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Whatever that was.
Yeah.
I
mean, the scene, I will say, the two good scenes-ish, you know, I know you hit it. Oh, and you said, I don't think the script is horrible. I just think we've seen everything before. And that's kind of how I feel
and
about the whole
movie. And
that
doesn't make the script horrible, though? That's what I'm saying. I don't understand. You
well,
know
like,
what I mean?
the lines, like, with Bridget Moynihan, with, like, the vegetarian lines, like, that was horrible. I got it. But, like, there's a lot of scenes where I'm not, like, cringing. I'm just like, okay, let's get this done.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, okay, so...
But it does make it bad.
I mean, it's not cringeworthy, but it's... I mean, it's like...
It's not like The Last Airbender where
it's watching a rerun. You're
kind of
like, oh,
yeah,
well, you know, this is just... This is what it was.
Yeah. But
in
I will say, like, I will say, like, that scene with Eckhart before he ruins it. I know you probably didn't like it, but the speech, it was decent.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, decent. Okay, I guess I'll give you decent. I mean, but like, there's that awesome. He was one of the people fighting under him. This black guy's older brother was under Aaron Eckhart's command like 3 years earlier, and he goes. And so, like, the brother died, Aaron Eckhart survived, so this guy's got a beef to pick with Aaron Eckhart.
And
he had this, this moment where he, like, recounts all the people he's lost, and it's, like, it starts kind of powerful, and he's like, your brother was, like, a good Marine.
Yeah.
He was a great Marine. And then he just goes, none of that matters now.
Yeah,
and you're just like, what?
Everyone erupted in laughter.
And there's other lines like that, too, that aren't even funny bad, like, I thought kind of abrasively bad. Like, for example, there's a line that someone says, like, I'd rather be in Afghanistan. Like, really? Like, don't say that. Like, Afghanistan's actually war. Like, this is a fictional movie. It's like, just leave Afghanistan out of it. Like, let's assume that Aaron Eckhart was in Afghanistan and that's where those people died. But let's not bring it up in the forefront. He's like, I'd rather be in Afghanistan. It's like, I'd rather be fucking seeing any other movie in this theater. Like,
what did you think of the one, the single attempt at humor when she gets, Michelle Rodriguez gets alien juice all over her face and she's always
like, oh, I got juice on me, man. Yeah,
I got it in my
and
mouth he's like, again. And he's like,
something. That's not what you do on a first date.
Yeah.
Or something like that. You mean the guy with the glasses who looked just like Neo? The lead singer from TV on the Radio?
Is that Neo or no?
Who's Neo?
Well, Neo, the pop star is in the movie.
Neo. No, I don't know. Yeah. Is that what Neo looks like?
That's Neo, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Neo should keep singing, man. Should keep singing.
I'm really curious to see if... because I haven't seen The Killing Room or Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
That was Neo.
That
was Neo.
So I wonder if he's going to adopt the same style for Wrath of the Titans. Not like I give a shit, but...
oh my god, he's directing that.
So.
Good, though. You know, it's good that they're finding people. Actually, you know, I mean, to Jonathan Liebs and credit...
With Edgar Ramirez.
Very talented. To Jonathan Liebsman's credit, he did direct his short film...
Oh, yeah.
I cannot remember the title. I apologize, but his short film, I believe that he
you can find on YouTube.
Directed still at NYU. Very impressive. Nice little twisty movie, about 6 minutes long. Check it out. It's very Genesis and Catastrophe. Yeah. Yes, check it out. Awesome. It's on YouTube.
Just 11 short years ago.
Now
he's directing Battle of
11
Angels.
Short years ago. Amen. And I mean, hey, there's always Darkness Falls.
Yeah.
Which he also gave us.
About Los Angeles.
Don't see it.
I forgot to bring this up. The most egregious use of marketing. And you gotta always thank Sony for that. I don't know if you noticed this. There's a scene where Aaron Eckhart is, I didn't mind that scene. It just felt exactly like any video game.
This whole movie felt exactly like every video game.
Yeah.
Which is another big problem, but anyway.
where there's grenade, he figures out how to, their wireless frequencies are picking up the signal, right. And so he goes, does the grenades, attaches the, yeah, anyways, and there's the most blatant billboard that says Resistance 3 on it.
Oh, really?
Like, it's like you don't see, everything else is just ruined, like, just, and there's this crisp, clean Resistance 3 billboard.
Well, because...
it's coming out this year, so...
So,
like, when did this movie take place? It doesn't say, I was just wondering, because that would just be a factual error, if that...
I have no idea.
Anyways,
Well, no, was it... No, No, it says August 2011.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Is that one that
I don't know.
If that's when Resistance 3 comes out.
You're asking
out,
me? I have no idea.
But this movie felt exactly like Resistance, so I guess great job. So.
Wait, did it feel like Resistance or Resistance 3?
I don't know. Yeah, we haven't played it.
Ooh!
I feel comfortable when I play like video games like this. I felt sick, actually, during this movie.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not like I was going to throw up, but like watching Cloverfield, I was so into it. I love the style.
Oh man, Cloverfield runs circles around this movie.
Oh yeah, and then this movie, I didn't feel good after it.
Neither did I, for different reasons.
Different reasons, true. No, so I would say Battle LA. It's not. What was?
But seems. I think you think it's a harmless diversion is what. Yeah. I think is the point. I think you're trying to.
Yeah. Certainly, I would say a step above last year's March film. Or no, it was Clash of the Titans.
I think I enjoyed Clash of the Titans better than this.
Really?
Well, yeah. All right. Definitely.
All right. Agree to disagree.
Yeah, definitely.
So, there you have it. Battle Los Angeles. It's in wide release, so go see any of the three other movies we already talked about.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about three great, three borderline great movies before this.
And then Rango and Dustin Biro. So
yeah, those two, jeez, yeah.
That wraps up our podcast, I think. Next week I've seen Paul. The embargo is up, so I can say, do not go see Paul.
You hate it.
I hated Paul.
You hated it.
With a passion.
Yeah.
And
Peter Paul.
Lincoln Limitless we'll be seeing. And
we'll be seeing Limitless. And we'll see the Lincoln Lawyer. We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Matthew McConaughey. The first of what will be the Matthew McConaughey comeback
year.
If you don't really know what we're talking about, look his name up. And I think the most recent Matthew McConaughey story will kind of give you some indication of that hopeful kind of renaissance, rejuvenation of the man's career. Yeah.
And then limited release of Win-Win, which you gotta see.
Right, which I gotta take a look at. Yeah.
We'll go see.
And also follow our South by Southwest coverage.
Yeah.
Because that is hot right now.
Hot off the press.
And also our new director's new films.
Yes.
And Senny's review will be up soon.
Nice.
And many, many others.
All right, cool.
Courtesy of Christy.
Thank you for listening. And you can follow us. I actually made a little email podcast at thefilmstage.com.
Ooh.
So you don't need to do it separately. All right. Well, thank you. And have a good night.